This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to NFL Live. Hey, it turns out Bill Belichick is a genius after all. More on that in moments. Dan Orlovsky is here. Mina Kimes and Marcus Spears are there. We're going to get to all of you, but Adam Schefter with us as usual. And Sheffy, give us the latest news around the league. Let's begin with some good news out of Tennessee.
Laura, for the second straight day, there were no positive tests recorded within the Titans organization. It's exactly what they needed to be able to reopen their training facility. If there are no positive tests tomorrow, it's conceivable that they could open the facility, get people back in, and begin preparations for a game Sunday against the Buffalo Bills. And then, of course, we have the situation with Ryan Fitzpatrick and the Miami Dolphins. Brian Flores hesitated a little bit yesterday, but today named Fitzpatrick the starter for another week. So no Tua, at least for this week. Fitzpatrick continues on as the Dolphins starter. And then, of course, Bill O'Brien fired by the Houston Texans yesterday. The fallout continues. The Texans are now in the midst of their preparations with Romeo Crennel as their head coach. The interim head coach, Romeo Crennel, at the age of 73 plus, becomes the oldest NFL head coach in history. History, Laura. That's according to Elias. There's never been a coach older than Romeo Crennel. He now is the interim head coach for the Texans.
Sheffy getting us going with some fun facts, and you'll be with us all show long, so stay right there. Let's get back to one of two games on Monday night. Patriots-Chiefs, Dan Orlovsky, Patrick Mahomes, and the Chiefs hosting the Cam Newton-less Patriots. And miscues an issue early for the Pats. It looked like, though, they'd be in great field position here, but it ends up being called that Mahomes is called down.
Yeah, this is obviously in the moment a terrible call. We understand that they're trying to protect the quarterbacks, but he's not in the grasp. He's actually starting to go down. This is a huge moment and one the officials just can't get wrong.
What is Brian Hoyer doing here?
Giving bad names to all backup quarterbacks in the NFL. Hoyer is one of those quarterbacks that should know you cannot take that sack in that moment without the timeout. Runs the clock down, end of the half.
And then in the third quarter, still down by the
ball
Patriots.
Out.
Uh-oh, what happened there?
Got to get the ball out. Third down, so I understand you're down in the red zone, holding it a little bit longer. But once that guy gets on top of you, that defensive end, you got to know he's hunting.
Now we're going to see Jarrett Sidimi comes in and makes something happen. The touchdown to N'Keal Harry.
Yeah, good call for him. It's a simple throw, one-on-one throw to the back pylon. Harry made the play.
Yeah, this one, though, not exactly what they wanted to see.
Yeah, but this is a ridiculous play by Tyrann Mathieu. Like, just the hand-eye coordination. Watch this. Pop up in here. Somehow he sticks his right hand out there for the catch. Great interception by the Honey Badger.
That head shake by Bill Belichick and then by Julian Edelman kind of told you the story of the entire night for the Patriots. But, Marcus, do the Patriots win that game last night if Cam is there?
Yes, they do. Listen, this game was the Kansas City Chiefs had 6 points going into halftime. The New England Patriots had visited the red zone twice, as we can see. And one of those, Brian Hoyer, giving a bad name to backups. But we already knew backups had a bad name because Dan Orlovsky is on this show.
Oh.
Listen, the bottom line is this. We talked about the weeks leading up and how this playbook would shrink based on the fact that Cam Newton wasn't in this offense. And it literally reared its head during this game. There were options that Josh McDaniels didn't have at his disposal. I would feel comfortable with saying that three red zone trips, at least Cam gets a touchdown and two field goals. All right? Now we're talking about 13 points. So the bottom line is, yes, Cam in the game, Patriots win.
I completely agree, and I got to defend Dan. I mean, there's some good backups out there. I like to think we're all in a group text, and it was lighting up because y'all were so upset last night. Just hand it off and, you know, throw screens. But listen, as far as the Patriots go, it was all about their defense. And in some ways, Marcus, it got me thinking about the Rams-Pats Super Bowl. Not just because it was kind of boring at halftime, but it was a reminder that game, and I was thinking about it last night, Bill Belichick will change everything about that defense week to week. And it is marvelous, and it's what makes him the greatest defensive coach in the history of the game. It's like he watched what Patrick Mahomes did to Baltimore's blitz and said, you know what? Not going to do that. They cut their blitzing rate in half. You saw they were rushing three, dropping back. Bunch of DBs with great success. They played more zone last night than they ever have against Patrick Mahomes, again, with some success. They really actually mixed up their coverages. You saw a mixture of man, zone, match. They were switching off, passing those wide receivers to each other like they were the Warriors defense out there. That is a well-coached unit. And if I'm a Patriots fan, I actually feel better about last night because you know, like Marcus said, with solid quarterback play, you can compete with anyone.
Let me quickly hop in here, Dan, really fast. Cam Newton, of course, still asymptomatic for testing positive for coronavirus. And Bill Belichick saying today that he's still going to wait and evaluate whether or not he ends up starting another quarterback. They don't know yet, but we could see him back pretty soon.
Well,
Go ahead, Dan.
Listening to Marcus and Mina, I feel like I'm listening to, you know, Matt Damon and Ben Affleck. And we're in Dorchester, Massachusetts, and you guys are just loving on the Patriots. This is what I know. Is when the game was going to get decided right after the Patriots made it 13-10. My boy Big Red outcoached Bill Belichick. Two things we know about the Patriots and Bill down in the red zone. One, they're going to play man coverage. And two, they're going to double your best player. Andy Reid said, okay, I know you're going to play man.
Right.
And I know you're going to double team my best player. So he's got two guys, Sammy Watkins and Travis Kelce. And he uses it against Bill Belichick with the releases. They take away three defenders. And that allows Mecole Hardman to get to the one yard line before Gilmore ever realizes it, and then he falls into the end zone. So Andy Reid, at that moment, outcoached Bill Belichick.
Can I be Matt Damon? I don't want to be Ben Affleck. Yeah. I feel like Marcus has to be Ben Affleck.
You say, how do you like that
analogy? That, I just want to say that.
Yeah, how do you like them apples is important and all of that. Hey, guys, something else, too, that's interesting. There's no shortage of creativity in Kansas City. They lead the NFL in touchdowns using motion in the three seasons since Eric Bieniemy became their offensive coordinator. Eric Bieniemy, a name we'll be talking a lot about because that Texans job is now open, and a lot of us think he should get a look there.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Texans head coach and GM Bill O'Brien fired yesterday, as reported by Adam Schefter. Associate head coach Romeo Crennel, the team's interim head coach. And in seven seasons, O'Brien went 52-48, won four division titles. But O'Brien said himself to reporters yesterday, quote, "We just didn't get it done." Adam Schefter back with us here. What are the plans, Schefty, for the Texans in finding a new coach and GM?
Well, a couple of things here to keep in mind, Laura. First and foremost, think about this. Bill O'Brien took away the play-calling responsibilities from the offensive coordinator, Tim Kelly, this past weekend. And so now the Texans have fired Bill O'Brien, and they're going back to the man that Bill O'Brien didn't feel comfortable to have calling the offensive play. So we start there, as well as Romeo Crennel taking over as the interim head coach. In terms of a long-range plan, the Texans can begin to identify head coaching candidates across the league, but they cannot interview another coach on another team until after this season ends. If they wanted to interview a coach that wasn't with the team right now, like Jim Caldwell, the former Detroit Lions head coach, they could go ahead and get a jump on that right now. If they wanted to talk to a college head coach, they could do that right now, but they are prohibited from talking to a guy like Eric Bieniemy or Brian Daboll or Byron Leftwich or Josh McDaniels or Greg Roman or Robert Saleh or Arthur Smith. some of the names that you have heard and will hear about in the next coaching cycle. These are men that they'll have to wait till the end of the season to interview. And in the interim, the offense will be left to a guy like Tim Kelly to run, while Romeo Crennel, as we mentioned, is the oldest head coach in NFL history.
Yeah, interesting, because there really could be a lot of openings after this season. Dan, how about the timing for firing O'Brien just a quarter into the NFL season? Why do it now?
Well, he should have done it when he kicked a field goal on 4th-and-1 last year in the playoff game. Or should have done it after the game when there was that collapse against the Chiefs. Listen, you're 0-4. Like, timing isn't going to be in your favor. But when you're 0-4, you don't get a say in that. And so you get a jump start on everybody else. We know there's going to be multiple firings in this offseason, so you get to start to accumulate your list, to Shefty's point. I could watch Sunday's game and point to one single play being the reason why Bill O'Brien's not the coach for the Texans anymore, and it comes down to protecting the quarterback. This is 3 years of Deshaun Watson looking at defenses and going, okay, that linebacker's in the A-gap, the offensive line's going to come down, but what's your plan? Your box is taken care of. You're going to take care of those linebackers inside. But no one's paying attention to the defensive end rushing. So is it on the quarterback? Is it on the coach? Don't tell me the quarterback's not smart enough to understand it. I've heard him decipher plays after games in detail. So this is 3 years of Bill O'Brien not being able to protect his quarterback. The interesting part about Houston is going to be, how does the ownership family of the McNair family determine where this goes or how it goes? Is it going to be general manager first? Is it going to be coach first? Is it going to be like San Francisco, where they hired Kyle Shanahan and he and then John Lynch called him and said, I want to be your general manager? So it's going to be very interesting to see how Houston wants to handle this.
Yeah, the Texans spending the most money on their roster of any team in the NFL this season. I realize, Marcus, they have Deshaun Watson on the roster, but, of course, no longer have DeAndre Hopkins and others. Is this an attractive job?
Yes, it is. It's very attractive. And like you mentioned, Laura, having Deshaun Watson, like, it's hard to find quarterbacks in this league. Ask a lot of other teams that's been cycling and rotating and trying to figure out who their cornerstone guy could be going forward. And let's remember, we're not far removed from Rick Smith being with the Texans and having tremendous drafts and bringing guys in that made immediate impacts and putting a team together. So, listen, it's a head coaching job in the NFL, right? And you come with roster situations and salary cap situations, but for the most part, when you look at a roster, especially if you're a coach and we're thinking they probably gonna try to bring in an offensive-minded guy, I start with Deshaun Watson. I can live with that. And I also have a stalwart left tackle in Laramie Tunsil. I'm okay. I got a guy that can protect the blind side of my quarterback, and I got a quarterback I know I can win games with. Let's go from there.
Those are two players, so Marcus. I mean, arguably two of the most important, certainly, quarterback positions in football. And I see what you're saying, right? Because that's what teams aim for with draft picks and cap space, a franchise quarterback like Deshaun Watson. But elsewhere, when you go up and down this depth chart on both sides of the football, there is not a lot of core talent. There are some guys who are going to be free agents, including J.J. Watt, Will Fuller, you know, arguably your best wide receiver is going to be a free agent soon. And you don't have money. Laura alluded to how much they're spending this year. We don't know what's going to happen to the cap. You don't have draft picks. You traded them away, your first and second. By the way, that first is looking pretty valuable right now at 0-4. So you're walking into a pretty challenging situation. Now, I'm not saying it's a bad job, because you're correct in pointing out, if you have Deshaun Watson, that is something to build on, but it is a tall task, because that roster is not going to look very different in the coming years from how it looks right now.
And think about this, Mina. If you go back to last January, the Texans were playing a playoff game in Kansas City. They led in that game 24-0. If you would have told Bill O'Brien at that point in time that he would never win another game for the Houston Texans, I think you would have been very surprised at the reaction that a statement like that would have generated, but that turned out to be the case. He never won another game with the Houston Texans.
That's wild to think about. The Texans played the toughest schedule through 4 weeks. It's still the only 2019 playoff team without a win this year, to your point, Shefty. To another team not living up to expectations, the Detroit Lions under Matt Patricia. They fell to 1-3, and this is what Patricia had to say about falling short again this year.
Certainly, I think when I came to Detroit, there was a lot of work to do, and that's what we're trying to do. Talking about this year right now, we're talking about right now, and these first four games, and obviously today wasn't good enough.
So, Dan, you played for some of those Lions teams in the past that Patricia might have been referencing there. What's your reaction to what he said?
Well, he says that there's a lot of work to get done when he got to Detroit. And so my question is, what was the work? Because was it rebuilding a roster? No, that roster was healthy. Was it becoming a consistent winner? No. Jim Caldwell in his four seasons won 36 games, tied for the most ever in the history of the Lions organization. Was it rebuilding the culture of the locker room? No. I was there. I was in it every single day. It was probably the best culture, locker room-wise, that I had been in my 12-year career. Was it rebuilding the image in the community? Nope. The community absolutely loved that head coach and football team. So what was the work that you say needed to get done? If you're going to tell me that the work was to win the games that were the big games versus the teams that were winners and win the big division championship, fine. If that's the work that you say you had to get done, I'll give you that. You failed at that. The truth is then that if that's the work, you have failed at that. And then don't start deflecting questions and saying, I'm only going to talk about now. Don't ask your players to be accountable to themselves if you can't do that as a head coach.
Here's my issue with Patricia. You're a defensive coach. That's your calling card. Since you came to Detroit, this has been the second worst defense in football, according to efficiency ratings, okay? And you have invested draft capital there. You have signed guys. You signed, like, every former Patriot. So you can't say you didn't do anything. You have put your stamp all over this defense. You have implemented a system, a scheme. All they do is play man coverage there for some reason. And it's not working. You have not bent that scheme around the talent you have. You have asked them to bend to you, and it hasn't worked. So what have you done? What do you got to stand on? I just don't see it. And I don't see the case for him there based on how this defense has performed.
Man. Shout out to my brother and my sister, and I'm rubbing off on y'all. Don't get used to it because it's a lonely place when you make statements like that. But when you're being honest, it's going to be hard. Laura, you see that graphic on the bottom of the screen right now?
Can
you see that?
I do.
What does that say? What does that record say under Matt Patricia?
10-25-1 under Patricia, 25-23 in previous three seasons.
Case closed. Let's move on.
There you go. Let me add something else to that, Marcus. The Lions have a losing record under Patricia when leading by double digits, including an NFL record 6 straight losses. So even when they got up big, they couldn't hold on to that lead. Case closed.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Moving to the AFC East, let's talk a little Pats. They fell 2 games behind the Bills. The last time New England was 2 games back this late in the year. Week 8 in 2002, Drew Bledsoe led the NFL in passing. Emmitt Smith was in his last season in Dallas, and Brady only had 1 ring. Here's how we got here. The Patriots haven't gotten the same production on defense, ranking 18th in efficiency. They led the NFL last year. And for the Bills, Josh Allen is having an MVP-like start. His 15 touchdowns are tied for the 3rd most through 4 games in NFL history. He's also on the Dan wagon. It all adds up to the Bills having a 78% chance to win the AFC East, something they haven't done since 1995. So, Dan, put you on the spot right here. Which team is the best in the AFC East?
It's the Buffalo Bills. Right now, their quarterback's playing better. Right now, their tailbacks are playing just as good. Right now, they have a significantly better skill position group. Right now, their front seven's probably playing just as good as New England's. Now, New England's secondary is definitely playing better. But they got a guy who's top three voting right now in the as MVP in the NFL. And they're versatile on offense. The receivers, as good as New England's secondary is, their receivers will match up just as well. And they've got enough pieces to be able to be explosive and attack this New England Patriots defense that isn't last year. They're giving up more explosive passes than they were last year. And this offense still, once they're going to play a team that's going to go, we're going to shut down your run. We know Cam's going to be a runner. We're going to force you to throw the football against a good secondary. I still don't believe that this Patriots offense is going to be able to do that.
All reasonable explanations, except that Bill Belichick doesn't coach for the Buffalo Bills. And we saw them last night without Cam Newton push arguably the best team, and it's usually not an argument with people, all the way until the fourth quarter. I still have the Patriots, and there is no reason for Dan to change. Buffalo looks tremendous. Quarterback playing out of his mind. Tre'Davious White in that secondary, bringing in Diggs, was amazing. The New England Patriots figures out ways to take away what you do best. They had the one anomaly, and I call it an anomaly because it doesn't happen to Bill Belichick when they played the Seattle Seahawks and gave up five passing touchdowns. Outside of that, Josh Allen already knows, Sean McDermott already knows that this will be the hardest, Brian Daboll already knows, this will be the hardest task for them this year when it comes to trying to scheme up and figure out defense. And I'm giving the edge still to the New England Patriots because I think Cam Newton makes that much of a difference.
Mina, break the tie here at the top of the AFC East. Bills or Patriots?
I'm sticking with the Bills because when I look at these two teams, unit versus unit, I think the biggest gap is between the skill players. The Patriots skill players sometimes out there look about as awkward as Dan pretending like he went to the club in college. Meanwhile, the Bills have one of the best groups in the NFL, and I think that's going to be the difference between these two teams. So I cannot wait to see this matchup.
Yeah, let's take that one step further, because yesterday when you're talking about some of these skill guys in the Bills, you had a pretty bold statement about their wide receivers. Take a listen.
This receiving group in Buffalo is a top three unit in the league. Stephon Diggs.
Are you kidding me?
John Brown.
That was too easy, man. Come on.
Cole Beasley.
We touched down in Vegas.
What a great grab.
I love how complimentary this group is. They just all fit together so well.
Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
We win it. We win it. My whole team, we win it.
We added those other people in there to make it really bold there, Mina. So we're going to put you on the spot. Who are the top three when we're talking about your wide receiver cores across the NFL?
See, I thought I could say top three and then not be held accountable and actually have to put together a list that'll make people angry. But all right, I'm doing it. I'm sticking with it. We're only talking about wide receivers, people. And at number three, I am putting Buffalo there. I just love this group. Look, Stephon Diggs, forget, you know, the groups. He's playing like one of the top receivers, period, in the NFL right now. Just added such an explosive deep element to Josh Allen's game that's, of course, been missing in the past. Just such a perfect route runner. And then, of course, Cole Beasley making some circus catches all over the place. John Brown is basically always open and continues to be so. Number two, I've got Tampa. You hear about Mike Evans. You hear about Chris Godwin. He's been hurt. I love him with Brady. But how about Scotty Miller? I don't even know if we've got Scotty Miller highlights on tap for me. First of all, love a grown man going by Scotty. Takes the top off defenses on the reg, also incorporated into the short game. Brady has tremendous chemistry with him. I really love that group. And my number one receiving group is Dallas. And by the way, this is what makes, I think, Dallas losing so insulting, because they have the best group of pass catchers in the NFL. Top to bottom, Amari Cooper, Michael Gallup, the rookie CeeDee Lamb. They're all amazing. Honestly, some of them, Gallup and Lamb, in addition to Cooper, could be number ones in other offenses. They are gearing up to tear me down. I had the Falcons
Listen.
You know, get the caveat things on
really,
NFL Live.
Really quick, and let me just make this great list, by the way, Mina, but let me make this one caveat just to specify. Only wide receivers. So you guys can't throw any tight ends in there or anything like that. Yes. Only wide receivers. Marcus, you go first. Any gripes with Mina's list?
I'm not killing her list at all. I would. The only argument I would make, and for as much as I love what the Buffalo Bills are doing, I think I'd take OBJ and Jarvis Landry over that group. Outside of that, I have no qualms with that group of wide receivers and those teams she put in there.
I cannot wait. I can't wait to see your mentions, Mina. To see the Seattle Seahawks people come and light your Twitter up, because that's your team. And you've got this whole let Russ cook thing. No, you can't put him at four. Your list was only three. This is what happens when you do television now, because once you make comments, you got to stick to them. You're
Dan, who cares about that? What do you think?
DK Metcalf, David Moore, Lockett. You're not going to take them.
Where would you put them?
Legit.
I would put them over.
What's your list, Dan?
I put them over the Cowboys.
You think that the Seahawks receivers are the number one?
That is crazy.
I would put
that is absolutely crazy.
I put the Cowboys at one. I would put the Bills at two. I would put Seattle at three and Tampa Bay at four.
Okay. Well, there you go, Dan. I actually thought for a second there, guys, that Dan wasn't going to have a list after talking all that smack, but turns out he did. So, Dan, you redeemed yourself. We've got some breaking news right now on NFL Live. Adam Schefter, what's going on?
All right, Laura, two teams closely linked to COVID-19, the New England Patriots and the Las Vegas Raiders. Well, moments ago, the Patriots placed a practice squad player, Bill Murray, on the reserve COVID-19 list, and the Las Vegas Raiders did the same for their defensive tackle, Maurice Hurst. Both players now go on the COVID-19 list, and again, you hope that they're okay and that they're safe and well. But the bigger thing is you wonder about the rest of the organizations. The Raiders, of course, fined all that money yesterday for players participating in Darren Waller's charity event last week, and the New England Patriots going through the scare that they did this weekend where Cam Newton tested positive. There had been nobody else that had tested positive on the Patriots organization. No other test had come back positive, but clearly this practice squad player sometimes today, this afternoon, developed some symptoms, and he now becomes the first Patriot since Cam Newton to be placed on the reserve COVID-19 list.
All right, you will stay all over all these updates. Thanks so much, Adam Schefter, with the latest here.
Snap back, looks right. Deep fade, right side of the end zone, touchdown, CeeDee Lamb. They go reverse left, Cooper, he's going to walk the dog in. This is insane.
On a reverse, they're going to give it to Beckham. He's rolling to the right and running. He's up to the 50. There he goes to the 20. 10, 5, touchdown, OBJ.
Looking right, throwing short of the end zone, intercepted. And that's going to do that.
How about the Browns smashing their way to that victory over the Cowboys with 300 rush yards, adding to their league-leading total? They've done it with a transformation on the O-line, improving from 31st last year to second this year in run blocking. That in terms of run block win rate, an ESPN metric used by NFL Next Gen Stats, which measures how well teams sustain their blocks. Of course, they did it without Nick Chubb in that game as well. Mina, what have you seen from this Browns running game under Kevin Stefanski?
This is the most dominant rushing attack in football right now. It's diverse, mixing in both zone and gap runs. It is confusing. You saw the misdirection on the OBJ end around twice. The passing game flows from it. But Laura, as you pointed out at the very beginning, it all stems from this transformation in the offensive line. We knew when they picked up Jack Conklin, that was a big free agency pickup, that he could run block. But the entire right side of this line, going from J.C. Treader, the center, to Wyatt Teller, the guard, to Conklin, they are macerating dudes. Macerating is the most aggressive verb I could think of. It's when you turn fruits into juice. I have a machine downstairs that does it. That is what is happening on the football field. And it's why a player like Nick Chubb can go out. D'Ernest Johnson, come right in. This offensive line is going to clear massive lanes for you, and they've been doing it all season.
no shot that macerating is a real word, right?
Like, it's a real word. If Mina says it, it's real.
I bet you.
Go ahead.
I bet you a dollar it's not a real word.
You're going to lose a dollar.
Mina, your point on the right side of the offensive line's unique and spot on because they're reminding me this Browns run game of the Titans from last year. To be a good run game, you got to be really good on the front side, but great on the backside. Look at the backside of the run, kind of pitching off that penetration, but then those shooting linebackers. And watch Treader just turn. Like 64's back is to us. That is called being great on the backside and sealing off in your run game. That's how you become a dominant run game. And then we talk about being great on the front side. Again, shutting off lanes. Watch Treader, Teller, and Conklin right here. This is part of that zone run game. Slap that defensive tackle down. Those two guys are turned right now. When you get an offensive lineman parallel to the line of scrimmage, you're kicking the defense's tail right there. And so, you know what's the most fascinating part of this offensive line? We saw the statistic. They were bad last year. Mm. They're dominant this year. And now it's because even though teams know we're running the football, the Browns will come to the line of scrimmage and unapologetically make it obvious. We're going to run the football. Eight-man boxes versus our run game. They're averaging 6.5 yards a carry. Do you know what it's like as a play caller to know, I'm going to call a run, we're going to get in second four, life's going to be good? It's a dominant run game because it's great front side and it's fantastic backside.
Marcus Spears, there was a Thursday night game, week two, after a poor performance by the Browns. Yeah, but let me tee you up here. Where you said that Baker Mayfield needed to outplay Joe Burrow, not even just win, but outplay him, or they might need to look for a new quarterback there in Cleveland. Are you buying the hype now that they seemingly have righted the ship?
Listen, guys, I agree, and we can look on film, and we can talk about how good this offensive line is. But are we really buying the Cleveland Browns right now? I see the improvements. Stefanski has done a tremendous job. Baker is playing within that system and looks good. They're running the football, which I think can carry over. But are we like seriously bought in like that? Or is this just about the offensive line? I need clarification, Laura. I need clarification from Mina Kimes and Dan. Is this just bought like for the rest of the year?
Yeah, I thought they would make the playoffs in June, so I'm in.
Mina?
Okay,
I'm buying into Stefanski. I'm buying into the offensive line and what Baker's doing in the system. I'm not buying into that pass defense yet. Right. I will say that. That is still a problem. Okay. We saw they were up 41-14, and we saw what happened.
Yeah, thank you. Do we have a graphic of the last three teams they played? I don't know if we do, but I asked for it. I think they played the Bengals. I think they played the Cowboys. And
Washington.
Who else did they beat up on?
Yeah, Washington there we go. Football team.
Washington football team. Okay, guys, listen. We know what the NFC East is. They got both of those teams. They beat the Bengals, for God's sake. And Geno Atkins didn't play, and a lot of other defensive guys didn't play. The only real team they played, they lost 38-6. Let's give it a break.
Okay.
They play the Colts and the Steelers, and then I'll let y'all know how I feel about the Browns.
Yeah, by the way, the Colts and Steelers 1-2 in defensive efficiency so far this year, so we will find out a little bit more. Apparently we like Aaron Rodgers on this show or something. I mean, what's up with you guys?
Very complimentary. Very complimentary show.
Marcus is just, we're gonna
move on. Well, he's good at football.
Yeah, listen, we might have a point because this might be the best stretch of Rodgers' entire 16-year career. His total QBR, 92.8. That's the best in any four-game span in his career. That mark also the best by anyone through four games since QBR tracking even began in 2006. Second and third on the list, 2013 Peyton Manning and 2007 Tom Brady. Pretty good. All right, he also has 13 touchdowns and zero picks. It's tied for the most touchdowns without a pick in any four-game span in his career. Rodgers, no lack of confidence with Pat McAfee today.
I sometimes laugh when people talk about, you know, down years for me, because a lot of times down years for me are career years for most quarterbacks.
Yeah!
Yes!
Yes!
What a savage.
What a savage.
What a savage comment.
Man. We'll get to that more in a moment. Mina, by the way, prayers up to you for sitting Robert Tonyan in fantasy last night. But anyway, Aaron Rodgers.
Someone tried to tell you he was going to go off.
Aaron Rodgers. Rodgers and Matt LaFleur, what a duo they've been. What's impressed you about them as a quarterback-coach combo?
You know, all offseason, we were so worried about the chemistry between Rodgers and his receivers or who would even play receiver, when we should have been focused on the chemistry between the quarterback and the head coach, because that's what has made this Packers offense a buzzsaw. That's what it is. It reminds me a little bit, the way they're clicking, of Matt Ryan and Kyle Shanahan during Matt Ryan's MVP season. And you really have seen the Shanahan influence, which of course there's connection between him and Matt LaFleur, in this offense. Last night, no wide receivers, no problem. They're in 31, sending the Swiss Army Knife, Tyler Irvin in motion, sending both backs downfield. Of course, they're against base personnel there, which is, again, something you get a benefit from, much like Kyle Shanahan does when you're using your backs in the passing game, easily outrunning. In that case, it was a cornerback in the flat, but the other, he could hit Aaron Jones for a giant game there too as well. He was matched up against the safety. And you see that all the time in this offense. It doesn't matter who's catching passes. It doesn't matter because they're getting schemed wide open and Aaron Rodgers is hitting them in stride. I mean, they're unstoppable.
Yeah, you're spot on about the offense. But last night, for me, it was, okay, defense, what can you show us that makes us believe in the Green Bay Packers as a total football team? They're two corners. Jair Alexander and Kevin King do two things really well. They will cover and they will tackle. And I just want to talk about this from a offensive play caller perspective. Like, when you watch corners on tape, you start to question, okay, can we get after them with a certain kind of receiver in coverage? Maybe it's a really shifty receiver. Nope, they can cover those guys. Maybe if we put a big body on them, can we get open? Nah, they'll cover those guys as well. Can we throw the ball downfield to them? Nope, they're really good in coverage with that. Can they play zone? Can they play man? Both those guys can do it. And then you go, you know what? Can they tackle? Are they willing and able tacklers? Because if they're not, I'll throw screens at them. I'll throw toss sweep at them. Make them tackle early on in games, and then they won't cover as well. And what I saw last night out of Alexander and King is they'll cover and they'll tackle. And those two guys are difference makers for that football team now.
Marcus, I hate to do this to you because I really do love you, but you picked the Falcons. And you love Aaron Rodgers, but you still picked the Falcons.
Yeah. Wow.
So how does that factor in to how you feel about the Packers and all of these glowing remarks?
Hold on 1 second, all right? Because y'all living in this moment too much. I took one for the damn team, and all three of y'all know it, okay? I took it for the team, period. America, sometimes you want to pick somebody, but you want to be a good friend to the show, and you want to be a good, willing participant to the rest of your teammates, Dan Orlovsky, Mina Kimes, and Laura Rutledge. So I took the Falcons to make it interesting. Bottom line is this. All right, let's be honest. I feel like I keep throwing the gauntlet down. But this is the thing for me. This is how I look at football. And the thing that's beautiful about our show is that we all view it differently. We have different nuances. We agree on some things. Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers are considered one of the top teams in the NFC. They're considered a contender to either go to the Super Bowl or a deep playoff run. I'm not judging them off teams that ain't about to do that. Just like I just got done talking about Cleveland, I'm not judging Green Bay based on who they played, whether this offense is going to continue to do this, especially if they miss weapons during those games. So I'm going to wait. They gonna have success. I gotta see if it's gonna happen like this along the way.
Listen, I know. By the way, we do not pressure anyone into making picks on this show. New on NFL Live, our own Adam Schefter. Due to the concerning increase of COVID-19 cases, this is a tweet from Jeffy moments ago, hospitalizations in the Green Bay area and across Wisconsin, the Packers have put an indefinite hold on hosting fans for games this season at Lambeau Field. Time for one more thing before we go. Marcus Spears, this is you.
Listen, I've been hard on the Dallas Cowboys defense, and I've been hard on this defensive line, but it's time to put up a shut up. Just like we're talking about teams that haven't played anybody, you're about to hit a point in your schedule where you could win either four out of these next four games or three out of them, Arizona being the caveat. Dallas, stand up or lay down. What you gonna do?
Well, guys, as we let you go, we've got a nice dictionary definition here. Macerate. Mina Kimes giving us this word. It says to cause to waste away.
See?
By as if I couldn't read it. But anyway, it's a real word. That's all we really wanted to know.
Prove it. Was that Webster's?
That's a technical football term.
Dan,
y'all.
Was that Webster's dictionary?
It probably was. Either way, it's an actual definition of a real word. We'll see you tomorrow on NFL Live. Macerate. So aggressive.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.